Hello, friends, and welcome to another edition of Crossroads for Faith and Culture Meet. I'm Dean Welty here in the studio with Rita Dunaway, and today we'll be talking about something Rita has referred to as the Dumbo syndrome. Now, I'm a little bit curious about this, so we'll see how this comes out. But she's talking about the Dumbo syndrome and how it threatens the American way of life and even raises the question of idolatry of government. Mm-hmm. So, Rita, let's dive right into this. The idea for this program apparently comes from an article that was published by WorldNet Daily on your weekly commentary, and it was also published locally in the Daily News Record, so some of our listeners may already have read that commentary. But for those who haven't seen it, Rita, explain to us what this Dumbo syndrome is and what it has to do with the topic that we have today, dependency on government, I guess, and Dumbo himself.
Yeah, well, before we do that, Dean, I'm going to put you on the spot here. How old were you when when you first became familiar with Dumbo? I assume you've seen the film.
Well, I confess, I only became familiar with Dumbo when we had children.
Okay.
He was not a part of my life.
All right.
So there may be others like me who
there may be.
Were never introduced to Dumbo.
Well, we're going to introduce everybody today.
All right.
Hopefully, all of our listeners have seen or read the Disney classic Dumbo about the little circus elephant with the huge, floppy, adorable ears. Yes, Dean, Dumbo is adorable.
Can we take a ride on him at Disney World?
Yes, you
there?
Can.
Well,
yes, you
that's
can.
Another place where I got acquainted with Dumbo.
Well, remember, if you think back to the story, there's this little mouse, Timothy, and Timothy convinces Dumbo that he can use those big ears to fly as long as he is holding this magical little feather in his trunk. Now, of course, Timothy knows that there's nothing magical at all about the feather, but he uses it as sort of a psychological trick to boost Dumbo's confidence in his ability to fly. Well, what happens at the climax of the film, Dumbo discovers that his power to fly does not depend on the magic feather at all. He realizes that he has had the power all along because of those huge floppy ears that everyone made fun of. So this is what I mean when I say that Americans today suffer from the Dumbo syndrome. We look at our community and we see challenges like poverty, hunger, mental and physical illnesses, broken family structures, and then we look elsewhere for someone or something to provide solutions. And more specifically, Dean, we tend to think of government as the magic feather that we require to better our communities and address these local problems. Does that make sense?
Well,
that's why I call it the Dumbo syndrome.
It makes sense, but it also reminds me of something we talked about last week, this false god of politics. We're looking for somebody else to fix our problems.
That's right.
That what Dumbo did? He looked at something else that was really no solution at all.
Exactly. You got it, Dean.
Wow. Finally broke through. The light is broken through. Well, again, Rita, this has really been brought into focus under the current administration, the Trump administration, because with all the budget cuts that are being proposed, leaders and beneficiaries of all kinds of organizations that may lose federal funding are convinced that the sky is falling. And Rita, I want to recall something. One of my first forays into politics was attending a town meeting in Stanton where then Senator George Allen was speaking. He honored a veteran, and then he asked for questions from the audience. There were several hundred people in the auditorium. Almost every one of those who spoke had their hands out. Well, when are you going to give us this big grant so that we can do this important work in our community? It amazed me.
What can government do for me? How can government get me started?
And I felt so sorry for Senator Allen and other political leaders who hear every day people pounding on their desks demanding more money for their pet projects.
Well, it's this whole attitude that we can't do good things in our community unless we have a check from the government coming in to enable us to do it. So that's exactly what we're talking about with the Dumbo syndrome.
Well, I'd like to paraphrase something that Ronald Reagan said when he was talking about new government programs. He says, a government program is the nearest thing to eternity that you'll find on earth. It goes on forever and ever. And that's it's the good. Same way with government benefits. Today's benefit becomes tomorrow's entitlement.
That's exactly right.
And you dare not take it away from me.
Well, to get some specific examples about what we're talking about, there have been multiple articles in the Washington Post recently that specifically focused on after-school programs, you know, for kids who don't have a parent at home after school lets out. Some of these programs apparently rely heavily on federal funding. So let's be clear. After school program is a wonderful thing. It is undeniable that the needs these kinds of programs meet are significant. Children with working parents need a safe place to spend time after school until their parents get home. Some of these kids may need tutoring that their parents are unable to provide. Maybe they also need a healthy snack, a few more caring adults to mentor them, and the space to get some exercise. After-school programs have the potential to meet all of those needs, so they're wonderful. But my point is, Dean, we can have after-school programs in our communities without federal funding.
Really?
And we will come back to exactly that later. But it's just so interesting that as I have read each of these articles that has shown up in the Washington Post about how the world is coming to an end because there's no federal funding for after-school programs, there's never any mention in the articles of looking for private solutions, of looking for some other way to get the resources other than having the government provide them.
Well, Rita, I think it's become a disease in our culture, this disease of dependency. It can lead, I think, quite quickly and easily to tyranny.
Yes.
Because the more we become dependent on government, the less individual freedom we have.
Yep.
It is a set shape of a pie that it cannot expand. You cannot expand liberty by going to government.
Right.
You lose your liberty by depending on government. Well, it's so interesting that after-school programs have been such a focal point of these claims that, yes, we do become dependent upon government funding. And I think most people, for example, would identify the Boys and Girls Club as the gold standard of after-school programs. And as you shared in your article, its history is a lesson in the power of private individuals working together to solve community challenges.
That's exactly right, Dean. Way back in 1860, three women in Hartford, Connecticut, saw a bunch of ill-mannered boys, I won't call them thugs, but sort of what they sounded like when I read about it. They were wreaking havoc on the community because they were roaming the streets. So these three women decided to do something about it. They formed an organization, which eventually became what we know today as Boys and Girls Club of America. Its primary mission, Dean, was character development. And of course, character development led to improved behavior, higher achievement, and ultimately stronger and safer communities. According to the Boys and Girls Club of America's 2015 annual report, so bringing us to present time today, an astounding 3.82 million kids benefited from this organization pursuing its mission, and its mission is to enable all young people, especially those who need us most, to reach their full potential as productive, caring, responsible citizens. Dean, that is no job for the government, and especially the federal government.
Well, Rita, that's really interesting. This goes back to 1860. I didn't realize it had that long a history. Mm-hmm. That is precisely the same period of time that the Salvation Army was formed.
Oh, wow.
In Britain. When Booth went into the streets there and saw the problems, whether they're thugs, prostitutes, drunks, whatever, he said, we need to do something. Not where is the government?
Yes.
Why doesn't the government fix it? We need to do something, just as these three ladies in Hartford, Connecticut did, as you mentioned. Well, that's a great example of what we can do today to solve community problems when we take personal responsibility. We know that those three Connecticut women who founded the Boys and Girls Clubs of America weren't cashing in any checks from the U.S. Treasury in 1860. But doesn't it receive public funding today, Rita?
Well, that's a great point, Dean. I did a little bit of research, and from what I could tell, its annual report indicates that the National Boys and Girls Club organization receives around 17% of its funding from the government. But the important thing to realize is that it receives far more from an impressive list of businesses and private foundations and individuals who support it. That's where the real wealth is.
It would be nice if it were 100%.
And I think it could be.
Yeah.
There's no reason in the world why it couldn't be.
And one of the reasons I say that is wherever you have a government grant, you have a government string attached to it. And that, I think, is, again, another danger of government dependency.
Yeah.
Well, Rita, this whole topic reminds me of a program we did some time ago. You had run into a gentleman named Max Lyons, and he was our guest on the program. And at that time, he shared with us the great principles that he has written about in his book, Government Takes All, ..
Yep.
What's left for me?
It's a great book.
I'm sure it is, and it's not a thick one. I see it in your hand right now.
Yeah, it's in my hand. It's very thin, very readable.
The principles that he outlined in that book have to do precisely with the different spheres of responsibility and authority that exist in civilization. Mm-hmm. The individual, the family, the church, the government, and private associations, all working together.
Right.
For a common cause.
And Dean, I have the book with me here today. I just wanted to read this little portion of it because I can't say it any better than this. Dr. Lyons says, although we readily understand and apply the concept of jurisdiction in the home, church, and workplace, many seem reluctant to apply it to civil government. Do we ask, is this the jurisdiction of civil government? If there is a problem of any sort in the community, we often assume that it is the responsibility of the civil government to take care of it. We should ask, is this something that should be taken care of by the individual, the family, the church, a voluntary organization, or the civil government? However, some assume that all problems are to be addressed by civil government. And I'll stop reading there, Dean. That is exactly the point. Today, more and more, our society wants to rely on government to do everything. And we give it more and more power as we look to it to take on more and more of the responsibilities that really belong to one of those other spheres. We don't just look to government today to perform the essential core functions of government, like protecting us, maybe building roads, and administering justice. We look to government today to feed the hungry, care for the sick, educate our kids, take care of our kids after school, decide what kind of products we can buy on the market, and the list just goes on forever. So this is why I suggest that we have a serious problem on our hands of actually making government into an idol.
This really troubles me. Mm-hmm. It's particularly troubling with respect to the federal government.
Yes.
You can understand it at the local government because the people are there. They have a voice in what their local government does. But the federal government is just so huge, so overarching, and so distant from the people. And as we have discussed many times, the federal government was created to perform only those specific enumerated powers listed in the Constitution. And I just had to run and get my Constitution here.
I see it.
And the 10th Amendment makes very clear that the powers not delegated to the United States government by the Constitution are reserved to the states and to the people. And we can go into that list of enumerated powers, but they don't include that whole list that you've just described about feeding the hungry, caring for the sick, educating our kids, caring for our kids after school, blah, 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 and on and on and on. And so to the extent that the federal government is performing all of these various functions today that you've just described and that are nowhere listed in the Constitution, it is generally acting beyond the scope of its legitimate power. Mm-hmm. And that is something we should all be deeply concerned about in a nation that operates under the rule of law. Absolutely. We have trampled on this Constitution. We have ignored it and in many cases simply torn it apart. Now, I'm reminded of Nancy Pelosi, who responded one time when she was asked if the health care law was in the Constitution. Are you kidding?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's unfortunately.
Yeah, it's not even taken seriously anymore. Yes. And, you know, I would just issue this challenge to our listeners out there. Get a piece of paper and make a list of some of the primary things that you think of the federal government doing. Just a partial list of what does the federal government do. And then I would encourage you to take out your Constitution and just read through Article 1.
Yes.
It's not that long.
Yes.
You know, that goes through what are the powers given to Congress.
Yes.
And you will be amazed at how little parallel there is between what the federal government actually does and what it actually has legitimate power to do. And, you know, I want to talk about money for a minute. I know that a lot of people tend to think of the federal government as this big vat of money.
They grow it on trees.
That's right. We don't know where it comes from, but we know they've got it.
Yes.
We want them to send it to us for our favorite programs.
Yes.
We need to remember that the federal dollars spent on programs are dollars that came from the people and businesses of our communities. Yeah. Many of them will gladly give directly to compelling community-based programs if we do the work of asking them. We should strive to rely more upon that kind of local generosity and less upon expectations of public funding, which, as you referred to earlier, always come with red tape and strings attached that are not good for our programs.
In addition to that, they take their chunk out of it so that the money that we send in, only a portion of that will come back
to us
because it stays in Washington. Well, we've talked about the Boys and Girls Clubs, Rita, and certainly part of the beauty of programs like that is because they are implemented by private individuals or associations. But in addition, they have the freedom to be creative in their approach to addressing problems without having that abusive federal government dictating to them how they should do it, when they should do it.
Mm-hmm.
It becomes a real threat to our freedoms, but particularly in this day of the so-called separation of church and state, which we've talked about many times, the best programs will be the private ones because they can freely operate according to biblical principles, and they can also share the gospel with those who serve without any fear of losing funding or violating some ridiculous federal rule.
And that's so important, Dean, because as we know, and anyone who is a believer will recognize, the most fundamental, essential need of every person is their need for a Savior, their need to be right with God. And so any kind of program that has to completely divorce itself from that is not going to truly be meeting the most fundamental needs of the people they serve.
And Rita, we've seen very troubling trends of the federal government actually shutting down private, religiously based programs because of this distortion of the separation of church and state.
Even when they're more effective than the secular programs.
It was the prison fellowship program in prisons that was more effective in reducing recidivism than the government programs. And yet they demanded that it be closed down because, heaven forbid, they might mention God in that program. And it goes back to what we talked with Sheriff Hutchison about just several weeks ago. More God, less crime. Mm-hmm. More God, better character. More God, improved standards of morality.
Makes perfect sense to
me. Well, let's go for it.
Well, let's talk about money again.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
There's another reason that federal funding isn't nearly as essential as we tend to think it is. With most, if not all, programs, the highest cost or expense is always going to be the people, the staff, to administer the program. Well, Dean, the truth is, all around us, there are retired teachers, bankers, doctors, salesmen, scientists, empty nesters. These citizens should be encouraged to impart their life experience to the next generation through mentoring and relationship building, all of which occurs in these types of programs. I am convinced, Dean, that many of these people would jump at the opportunity to be of service if we just convince them that no special qualifications are needed to hang out with kids for a couple of hours and help them with their reading or their math homework. There are also high school and college students who not only have time available to help younger kids, but also benefit themselves from learning more about the people in their neighborhoods and understanding how a community-based service program operates. As these young people serve their neighbors, they develop this lifestyle of service and build their own character along the way.
Well, Rita, I'm so impressed with so many of our young people. And I think of programs like Young Life, Campus Crusade. They work with other young people on a volunteer basis.
Yep.
Now I'm going to talk to the old people for just a minute.
Yes, please do.
Because there are so many people, as you mentioned, who have great experience that they can share. And I am always challenged by a verse in Psalm 71, verse 18. It says, "Now also when I am old and gray-headed, O God, forsake me not until I have showed your strength to this generation and your power to those who are to come." Our senior citizens have so much to offer, and they're just waiting for an open door where they can serve.
And, you know, Dean, I want to just add to that. We have lost something, I think, in our modern society because just a few generations ago, the family stayed closely knit together, where older generations were helping and training and teaching and imparting wisdom to the younger generations. And now, for the most part, that doesn't happen in any systematic way. You know, families move apart. Grandparents often don't live nearby. Right. But this is an opportunity. These kinds of community-based outreach programs are an opportunity to once again connect the older generations with the younger generations. And I think it is just such an important opportunity.
We have become segregated by age, by geography, and we've lost something in terms of those family relationships. But you know, Rita, I know you've had firsthand experience with this. You and your kids volunteer at an after-school program run by Covenant Presbyterian Church. And there are many churches who do the same thing, who operate without federal funding. They rely on a volunteer staff, and they provide food that is donated by church members. Tell us a little bit about that experience.
Well, I just want to say that program is a blessing to my family. My kids and I only help one day a week, so it's a couple of hours a week that we go. But I protect that day of the week for us to go and serve in that way because I love that it gives my kids an opportunity to be servants to other members of their community. And, you know, sometimes we don't feel like going. We're busy. We have lots of other things we enjoy doing. But I sometimes remind my kids on our way, this isn't about us. We're going to serve others. And I I'm fully convinced that they have grown as people and will continue to grow. I also wanted to mention there's this local Renew Camp that a number of churches in our community are involved in. I don't remember how many, but it pulls in middle school and high school kids for the week, and it sends them out in the community to visit nursing homes. Yeah. They put on vacation Bible school for kids. They clean buildings. You know, they just do service projects, and I just think that is incredibly important and valuable.
You know, Rita, that brings me back to the observations made by Alexis de Tocqueville when he came here in the 1830s to try to discover the heart of America. And he wrote this book called Democracy in America. And what he said struck me because it struck him. It surprised him. He said, I looked in the factories. I looked all over the country. What is the secret of America? He said, it lies in the heart of the churches and in voluntary associations. Yes. Not in government, but in the community, in the churches, and in voluntary associations. And you know, I can't possibly list all of them. We've talked about the Boys and Girls Clubs. We talked about Salvation Army. We have great organizations here in Harrisonburg. We have AvaCare, for example, that ministers to couples facing unplanned pregnancies. We have Greater Hope that ministers to those facing sexual brokenness and addictions. We have New Creation that assists victims of sex trafficking. We have Eastgate Ministries that helps women with a background of abuse, prostitution, drug addiction, and unplanned pregnancies. We've already mentioned the Salvation Army that serves hundreds of people who are in need of food, clothing, and shelter. We have Samaritan's Purse, Operation Christmas Child. The list goes on and on and on. But it also includes not just these, quote, religious organizations, Christian-based organizations, but our local civic organizations like the Rotary, Lions, Ruritan, and Kiwanis Clubs, to name just a few. But again, most importantly, the many churches that are located throughout the valley and which, like the one you attend, provide spiritual and material support for so many needs. Yeah. I just say Laus Deo. What does that mean in Latin?
Glory to God.
There you go. Laus Deo for these many volunteers.
Amen. Well, that brings us to a close of our program today about the Dumbo Syndrome. And if you listen to the program and you're not already involved in some way and helping some of these voluntary associations in the good that they're doing, I would just encourage you to get involved if you're able. You know, none of us can be involved in all of these, but I think almost all of us can do something to help. If you'd like to listen to this program again or share it with your friends, go to our website at valleyfamilyforum.org and click on the link to Crossroads on the homepage. We want to thank our generous sponsors at Blue Ridge Chimney Services and the dental practice of Scott Dunaway. And we want to thank so many of you for your prayers, encouragement, and financial support. If you would like to make a tax-deductible donation to help keep Crossroads on the air, you can do so by check to Crossroads at P.O. Box 881, Harrisonburg, Virginia 22803. We thank you again for joining us today. I'm Rita Dunaway with Dean Welty and engineer Robbie Meadows, inviting you to join us again next week at the Crossroads, where faith and culture meet.
Yeah. my rock and my song. Like he said, he has become my salvation. From the house of the Lord, we give glory.